Log Talk Radio.
Open, come on, open.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, what's up? This is Seth Green, and you are listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark, and I am so hot, I would desperately like a glass of water. Please, please give me some water.
This is Cindy Preston, and I'm with Mark on Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Melissa Peterman from CMT's The Singing Bee and the television show Reba, and I have to tell you, I just have to get it off my chest, I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi there. This is Faith Roscoe from General Hospital. You're listening to Mark on Somewhere in Vegas. And you better watch out. We know how to find you if you're not listening.
Hi, this is Shannon Egan from Whippet, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hey, this is Lee Allen Baker with Somewhere in Vegas, talking with Mark with a Q.
This is Courtney Cronin. You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas with your host, Mark, and I would make sure to listen every week because he's a sure bet.
Hey, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. I got two tickets to Paradise, and it's, you know what? It's Somewhere in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hi, this is Crystal Kale, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Mark Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Miracle Lori from Joss Whedon's Dollhouse. There are three flowers in a vase, and I'm listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Erin Hill, and you are listening to Mark on Blog Talk Radio and Somewhere in Vegas. Mark is a great guy.
Hi, this is Sean Pulaski. I'm still trying to figure out Mark Pico's sexuality, but I know you're listening to Somewhere Live in Vegas.
Here you go, Mark. I'm sorry. I thought you were she. I'm sorry. Get out of the tent. Let's get out of here.
Hey, this is Lance and Anna from Free Radio. And Anna?
And you're listening to Somewhere in Vegas.
Yes.
My favorite.
You know, that's usually what happens with me. I go to Vegas and I get lost, and so I end up somewhere in Vegas.
Somewhere in Vegas.
But I just don't know where it is.
Not quite sure.
Yeah, word.
Get ready. It's going to be hot. It's in Vegas. Check out Mark. Be there or be square.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I am Mark View. I am your host. We have some... Excuse me. We have some exciting guests coming up. We'll be talking to Chelsea Bingdon Welsh to talk about her watch company based here in Vegas. She's an active pilot, extreme enthusiast of extreme sports as well. And she's doing really great things in terms of what the company's doing, as well as watches, as well as her nonprofit. We'll be talking to her momentarily. We also today will have, give me 1 second here, we'll also have singer-songwriter Jeremy Parsons coming to talk about his music out of Texas. He's been doing he brings it back to some of the old mix of country rock and southern accents that we may see down in the Texas area, so we'll be talking to him in a bit. Sorry we didn't have a show last week, due to us doing a late show that week before, things got kind of screwed up. I wasn't able to book right away, so we're back this week with two great guests. We have a couple guests coming up in the next couple weeks as well. I know next week we'll have a show, and then the following week we won't have a show because I'll be out of town. We may do one. I'll be actually in Oklahoma City, so if I pick anything, it would be nice to have a little live show out on the road again. So I'll keep you posted on that as well. But I'll be in Oklahoma City in 2 weeks, so I'll let you guys know. Yeah, it's very interesting that we're going to have Chelsea on talk about a little bit about her company as well. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play a little music and see if Chelsea is going on with us right now. Let's see, what do we want to play? We haven't played any Sophia Rodgers for a little bit, so let me just the volume here. Sophia Radish, hot-blooded here, and we'll be right back, hopefully, with Chelsea Welsh. That was Yard Cow, everybody, by my good friend Erin Orion. We just caught up with her just a while ago. Really doing really well. She actually has a horse rescue up in California. I don't know if she's still doing music, but I will catch you up as soon as I can. But our guest, I believe, is here on the line. She is the CEO of Avegan Watches. Really a cool person, you know, just when you're reading her biography, just all the extreme things that she's done. And she's currently a pilot, which is really great as well. Chelsea Welsh is on with us right now. How are you doing, Chelsea?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I mean, how's the company been going so far? Obviously, we're just coming off Christmas. Was it a really good year for you?
Well, it was as of July of last year. Last year was our 10-year anniversary. So July of last year, we actually hit our best year. So everything on top of that was gravy. The holiday season was just incredible, and we're going full steam ahead. I'm, in fact, after this, on my way down to Tucson to go do the JCK Tucson show, which is the precursor to the big JCK Las Vegas show. And we'll be knocking it out. We've already done two shows this year already, so it's going to be a bang-out year.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting story about how you came about with the watches. I mean, it wasn't like that it was an opportunity where you it was something that you had an immediate passion for. It was more the fact that you kind of stumbled into this. Tell me a little bit about how the company got started.
Sure. Well, back in 2006, I was learning how to fly, and I was 3 years old, got my pilot's license in 34 days, which is fairly unusual, but I treated it like a full-time job at a Santa Monica airport and just went all day long. Got my rating, and then I was like, okay, great, I accomplished this big thing. I should get myself, you know, something that every pilot should have, which is a good watch. I looked for female pilot watches, and nothing existed. So it was honestly for purely selfish reasons that I started this company. I wanted a pilot's watch for myself that was made for women in mind. And now we offer adventurous watches for adventurous women, so pilots, scuba divers, race car drivers, anybody that likes to get out and do fun stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, why is it important for a pilot to have a good watch? Is there any certain reason that you know, pilots do need good watches?
Well, there's a few different reasons. Some of the aviator style watches that are out there, they can be a backup to your instruments in the event that your panel fails on you. So some watches, they'll compute time, speed, distance, fuel consumption. Of course, having a stopwatch is really important, because when you're up in the air, you know, down here when we drive around, we've got roads and we have intersections and stoplights, but up in the air, those things exist too. It's all just based on time. So having a good watch and a good timer is important for any pilot.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, for a while there, we weren't seeing people who usually wear watches. I personally don't wear a watch just for the simple reason that I have my phone. I mean, I can take a look on my phone and see what the time is. But I've been seeing a lot more demand for people to have, you know, a nice wristwatch, a classic wristwatch to put on their wrist. So it's been interesting to see companies like yours pop up right now in this day and age of technology as well. I mean, how has it been for you? How do you see the industry right now? Is it more of a fashion piece? Are we seeing more, you know, people wanting to go back to the old ways of, you know, being able to have something on their wrist that can tell time, you know, and help you navigate the world, as it were?
Oh, man, how long do we have? I mean, I could talk to you about that all day. But really, when it comes down to it, the smartwatches that are out there, all they're doing, and I have one myself, but all they're doing is really connecting from our phone, so we don't have to keep pulling our phone out of the pocket to look at our text messages or who's calling us or things like that. Having a watch on, though, is kind of a rite of passage. That's the way I look at it. So when you're walking into a board meeting or when you're walking into a job interview, or even if you're trying to just impress your girlfriend's parents or your boyfriend's parents, then having a good watch is something that people notice. It's a part of the whole outfit. So there is that side of it, and I definitely encourage, if you're going to have a smartwatch and you're going to spend the money on a smartwatch, you may as well also spend the money on a good watch that you can use for those other occasions where you don't need to check your texts and phone calls. The other thing is, and this is the case with all of our watches, none of our watches just tell time. they do so much more than just tell time. I mean, our dive line will go down 660 feet. You're not going to be able to check a smartwatch down there. So our watches, we really consider them to be tools for our trade. If we're scuba divers, if we're pilots, or if we're anything in between, then one of our watches is great for the field where you can't necessarily use a smartwatch.
Yeah, on the flip side of the technology portion of it, how has it been for you in these past 10 years to see the technology of being able to produce these watches? Obviously, now we've got 3D printers. We've got the ability to really to micro-size a lot of parts in terms of watches, and the ability of materials that'll go down that far into the deep or whatever. How has it been for you to kind of see the idea of the watch development come from where you started to what it is now?
Oh, I love it. I mean, when I was first starting in, and mind you, I don't have an horologist background, and I really had to teach my way into this industry. So I came in just, you know, trying to figure it out from day one. So all of the steps that were involved in making a watch, you had to go to a Swiss watchmaker who had, you know, hundreds of years of experience to say, hey, could you help me make a watch? I have an idea. And a lot of times the doors just got slammed in your face. Now, with the advent of 3D printers and with CAD development and just everything that you can do technologically, I mean, I was at CES just a couple weeks ago speaking on innovation in global trade and how we can just communicate with people all over the world to try and get our projects done. I wouldn't have a watch company had it not been for these improvements and advancements in technology.
Yeah, now, you know, you mentioned earlier about the fact that we're getting a lot more women that want to do some more, I guess we would call extreme sports. You know, like you said, auto racing, obviously, pilots, even those that want to be out in nature a little bit, rock climbing, et cetera. I mean, how's it been for you to see that portion of it as well? I mean, it's been amazing to see, you come out of these line of watches where, some of these girls do play a little bit tough when it comes out there, but they still want the watch to look nice. How's it been for you to be able to see the reaction that you get from some of the customers you have?
Oh my gosh, I love it. I absolutely love hearing the testimonials from, just like you say, there's so many more women that are getting interested in these activities, and even those that don't have an interest in flying or diving or racing cars or sailing boats or even, you know, mountain climbing. Even when they're just hard on their products and they've got three kids and they need stuff that's going to hold up. I mean, we had a customer a few months back that was so devastated, she almost bought another watch because she thought she'd lost hers. She found it about 5 days after she thought she'd lost it in her two-year-old mouth. Her two-year-old was just chewing on it and had somehow gotten a hold of it. And when she went to go get it, her two-year-old threw it and it hit the wall and went down to the floor, and she picked it up, she looked at it, she was completely petrified that the thing was broken. It was still ticking. She washed it off, put it back on, and that was it. So, I mean, I love hearing the stories of how hard my customers put these watches through and how they're still taking it, still working. I mean, I accidentally threw mine in the laundry one time. I had put my watch in my jeans pocket and then put all my clothes in the laundry and had it go through an entire cycle. And I kept hearing something clinging around, and I thought it was just change. You know how you leave change in your pocket sometimes? And it was my watch. And when I took it out, it looked brand new, which was great. It got a wash, and it was still ticking. There wasn't ever a problem with it. So that's kind of, I mean, it makes me smile when I hear these stories from my customers that just run them through the ringer.
Well, speaking of the engineering portion of it, it just kind of ties into your nonprofit organization, which I'm very, you know, I was very, very, very interested in hearing about. Was, you know, you're really encouraging women in STEM right now with the foundation. Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about and what the foundation is all about?
Definitely. So the company has offered for the last 7 years was when we came up with the idea to offer a scholarship to bring a woman to a conference that is industry specific of a field that they wanted to get into. we got such a great response from that that now we wanted to offer as many scholarships as we possibly could. So we increased it three times. This year, we're going to have three different scholarships that we're passing out this year, and next year for we're aiming to do five, plus have a lot of education and community outreach. The foundation is all about introducing women from the high school age on up to about probably mid-40s is really the age group that we're kind of going after, because a lot of times people go through you know, this time where they decide, I want to change my entire career, or they get to graduate college with a degree that they just got, but they don't really know still what they want to do. So what we're doing, and in fact, January 31st, this Wednesday, is going to be the first deadline for two of the scholarships. So if you go to abingdonfoundation.org, you can apply for the scholarship that we're going to be introducing for Heli Expo, which will be in Las Vegas at the end of February, and then for Women in Aviation, which is a conference being held in Reno, and we will fly you out. Last year's winner was from Ghana, so this is international. We will fly you out. We will put you up. We will hold your hand and introduce you to everybody within that industry, because all of our crew members are a part of these industries. They know all the companies, and if there was ever a field that you wanted to get into but you just didn't know how, then let us help you get into that field. Build your Rolodex, network, and let us get you in the door.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, a good example of that is the movie Joy, where the lead character, Joy, you know, mm-hmm. was a working mom. She was, you know, she was working jobs. She was going to support her family, but she was an engineer. She was on the side of the idea is doing inventing stuff as well. A lot of these moms are, I guess they're called entrepreneurs now. You know, while raising the kids are coming up with these ideas, these engineering ideas as well. So it's very interesting in that case that, you know, we're seeing, you know, some later in life entrepreneurs and engineers, and they're doing as well. So it's absolutely great to be able to see that they get these opportunities as well. And feel that they can do something. They can really invent something that's really, really cool. So, it's great to be able to hear that as well. You know, one other thing is that, you know, I've had a couple films over at the Artemis Film Festival in Los Angeles. The first time I went to the festival, there was a great documentary about women pilots in World War II called Fly Girls, which has actually been syndicated to a couple of television stations as well. So I don't know if you've seen that or you know, aware of it, but it's just amazing to see the history of women female pilots as well. I don't know how much dove into that.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite documentaries. A student, when I was flight instructing, a student of mine actually gave me a copy of that. He had found it and thought I would find it interesting. And it was a great documentary. I mean, of course, you know, the subject definitely hits home for me. But even just watching the documentary from a documentary standpoint, it was incredibly entertaining. It was incredibly thought-provoking. It really pulled at the heartstrings. And it told such a great story about our women air service pilots, the WASP. I thought it was a fantastic documentary. I'm so glad you've seen it.
Yeah, I was able to see it at the Artemis Film Festival, which is great to be able to be there, to be able to watch it in person, and have some female pilots be there, because they did a panel right after it, and hear some other stuff about being able to serve our country. And it's something that, you know, little known to people that, you know, these women did serve the military. They were pilots. Some were killed in action, technically killed in action, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was great to be able to see that as well. So yeah, I was immediately reminded that I was there to be able to watch that on there, and I ended up figuring that you probably would have saw it. So you know, let's you know, what's coming up in the future for you with the company in 2018? Are we going to be seeing some new styles? And you know, what kind of customer feedback are you getting back to continually upgrade and make sure that these watches stand the test of time, as it were?
Well, I mean, I've still been wearing my watch for the last 11 years, so they're only 11 years old, so far they're standing the test of time. and what we have new for 2018. I'm looking at introducing three new styles, which is going to be a tactical watch. We were just at the SHOT Show, Shooting Hunting Outdoor Trade Show, and worked a lot with military, law enforcement, and women who are in tactical fields, shooting, hunting, self-defense, things like that. So we are looking at coming out with a tactical watch. Again, it will be beautiful, and it won't look like your typical sporty tactical watch, which is going to be amazing. And then we're looking at coming out with a smart watch, another dive watch as well, that's a bit smaller in size. That's been a big request that we've received. And so three new watches in 1 year is the goal. That's a pretty hefty goal. I did it back in 2015. Hopefully we can do it again this year. And then in terms of the company, we've got, and the foundation, we're going to have the three scholarship awards. We are having a launch of the foundation. It's going to be coming up within the next few months in Las Vegas here. And, gosh, we're hiring, if you know anybody that needs a job. We definitely are expanding and bringing our production and our fulfillment in-house. We've normally outsourced that. So it's a big expansion year for the company. You're going to see a lot of stuff happening.
I mean, and that's great. For here, I mean, here in Vegas, I mean, you know, very little puts on the fact that there are some really great companies out here, and it's great to be able to see that that you're you know, taking part in really developing that business out here in Vegas. So, I mean, it's great to be able to see that the that we're going to get, you know, we have another solid business that's been that's proven to be a success story. So it'd be great to be able to see that as well. And I know there's so many pilots in Vegas anyway. It's probably one of the busier airports here in the United States. So, so yeah, it's great to be able to see that as well. Yeah. You think, what was I was going to ask you? I was going to say, mention that you guys can get one of these beautiful watches at the abingdonco.com. You guys can check out all the styles of watches there as well. What I was going to tell you, I know quite a few female fighters that are. That are happen to also be, you know, cops or paramedics and all that as well. So I need to get them, need to put them in your direction and see when those tactical watches come out.
Yeah, send them over to theabingdonco.com if they're having trouble spelling that. I know it's sometimes a tongue twister. Just look up female pilot watches, anything like that. You will find it.
Yeah, and I think your Twitter is down currently, but you are on Facebook as well. But you guys can check that over at the company website as well. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that was it. We covered a lot.
Hopefully we get more stuff going on with you as well. I'd love to have you back on the show. Obviously, you're a local, so maybe one of these days, maybe I'll have to trug on down to the factory and just get a live interview down there.
That would be great. You're welcome anytime. That'd be fun.
Yeah, it would be. Chelsea, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. And continued success here in 2018.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. That was Chelsea Welsh with the Abingdon Watches. You guys can check her out. The Abingdon Watch Company. Yep. Theabingdonco.com. You guys can check out all the watches from her very great collection. And she's a really great individual in the first place as well. So it's great to be able to talk to her. Well, my next guest is currently on the line. Very talented musician out of Texas. I thoroughly enjoy. I always talk about it when I talk to a country artist. There is a kind of, we're missing that in the country nowadays. It's a little bit too more poppy, but he has done really well with his new single, "Burn This House Down," and has been touring the United States as well as Europe as well. Jeremy Parsons is on with us right now. How are you doing, Jeremy?
I'm doing great, my friend. How are you doing?
Doing great. I mean, how's your year been so far?
It's been pretty busy. It's been nice. I've been playing. I'm up in Nashville right now currently, so I've been playing here a lot during the weekends, and that's been taking up a lot of that time. And I've been writing a lot, but it's been busy. I'd actually just got done with a co-write a few minutes ago. Wrote a really good song with a friend of mine, and I'm just trying to hit 2018 really hard, and you know, keep the momentum going, and keep this record alive, and doing a lot, playing out a lot too. So I think I probably have about 5 or 6 shows around town this week. So I'm pretty pumped about that as well.
About how long do you think that song took for you to write with your friend?
Today, it actually went pretty quick. Usually when I go into a co-write, we haven't seen each other, and it might be like weeks, it might be months, heck, it might even be a year. But usually it's like an hour of catching up, and then you write a song in like 30 or 40 minutes usually. Today it went really fast. It was mainly us talking and catching up and all that good stuff, and then we knocked out the song in under an hour easily. So, but that, you know, the momentum isn't always there, you know, you can kind of feel it when everyone's like meshing and going back and forth and throwing out lines that just really complement each other. It's got that flow, and the flow is definitely there today. So that may I always leave happy when that happens.
Yeah, you know, I always talk to musicians that come on the show about songwriting, and you know, some of them sometimes say that, you know, they've written songs in under 10 minutes. Some, you know, obviously, you know, a little bit longer than that. There's some people that take a little bit more longer. Sometimes there's those people that have ideas that they just keep in their back pocket until they come across it again as well. So it's an interesting process, to say the least. I mean, has that been the same thing with you, where you may have had a couple ideas in your back pocket that you've kept for a while and come back to them?
Oh, absolutely. Those are some of my. I've been doing that a lot lately. Since you asked, it's been funny. I'd say the last 3 months, I've been digging through my phone through notes, and for some reason, it clicked at the time, but not enough for me to like write 3 to 4 minutes worth of material on it. But for some reason, scanning back over it triggers something. Like, you made the note for when you were ready for it. When you were ready to find it, it would find you, kind of deal. Willie Nelson had a similar quote like that. I think he said, I don't find the song finds me. But it's that type of thing. It's ready and waiting for you, usually.
You know, do you have a preference to, you know, either getting melody first or the lyrics first, or is it kind of a natural thing for you to, you know, whatever comes first. Is it usual writing process, the melody first or the lyrics first, or is it just a mix of both?
Actually, it's a mix of both. But one thing that I've been really lucky with it is that usually when words pop into my head, it's accompanied with a melody. So all I got to do is find it on the guitar, and then everything just kind of comes unraveled from there.
Yeah, it's great to do that as well. Is this currently your first album, or have you done an album before this?
I did an album years upon years ago. I think we put it out in 2010. So, I mean, we're talking almost 8 years ago now. It was more a traditional country record. I was working with the Hank Williams estate a lot back in the day, and I was an opening act for a lot of the traditionalists at the time, and was just really influenced by that, and ended up making an entire record on that. And I toured off that record for I traveled to Norway off that record, did a lot of really cool things off of it. But then when it was time to make a new one, life had changed a lot for me, and so the music kind of changed with the person that I was becoming and had become. So, a lot of people, it was a nerve-wracking deal, because a lot of people gave me grief for that. They're like, oh, you sound like everybody else now. And I was like, it's still the same person singing the songs. Like, my voice is still, like, different. Like, it's still the same guy. It's just I've decided to write about other things that the record's called Things I Need to Say. I needed to write about things I needed to say. It was a therapeutic project for me. So But yeah, that first record was great, and I don't have any hard feelings toward it at all. It was such a fun time in my life, and I learned so much from it.
Yeah, you know that's probably one of the hardest things about being a musician or a singer songwriter is the fact that you know sometimes people don't realize that you do change as a person. You know, that's life. You know, you don't stay the same. And then, you know, sometimes if you recycle the same old thing, it's not going to be, you know, as big, you know, and it's one of those given processes where you don't know if something's going to hit or not. But, you know, I think sometimes the fans don't get that, you know, sometimes you do have to change directions a little bit. And that just, like I said, comes from experience as well. So, you know, how's it been for your fans to be able to hear this new sound? I know you mentioned that there are some people that were complaining about it, but were there other people that were actually, you know, delighted to hear this new one? And have you gained a lot of new fans with this new music?
Absolutely, and that was the most pleasant surprise when I put Burn This House Down out. There was that the demographic that was a fan of the old record that was like, no, I don't like it anymore. You sound like everyone else now. And then I got an entirely new demographic. And the other ones who were with me before, and they just love to see that, they love to be a part of my growth. And that's what I've always loved about artists, too, is like when you buy their first record, the second record comes out, you can tell their voice is stronger, their writing is better, like everything is kind of like tightened up, and like they're figuring it out. And that's what I've always enjoyed. And it was nice to see people like kind of come with me like that. And the thing that I appreciate about artists, they were appreciating about me, and it was nice to see that. But I did get a whole new demographic, which is really cool, and it doesn't hurt. But even I reached out to some people. I got some messages on like YouTube videos. They're like, oh, I hate that he changed. I love his old stuff. And I would message him back. You know, it kind of hurts your feelings a little bit, but you know, everyone's got an opinion, and I can't tell you you're wrong. I mean, you're always allowed to have it, but I respect that. There is some older sounding stuff on the record, like Making Things Up As I Go. The opening track has like some good fiddle placement and kind of has this like bluegrassy vibe to it. And then the last track, Why Is the Bluebird Blue, is very swing, traditional country-esque, like kind of Hank Williams Sr. inspired. So it's there's something for everybody on the record, and I tried to like let them know that I was still that person internally, but that person had also matured and grown as an artist.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a kind of interesting thing in terms of you know, an artist changing up the style and all that as well. But it's great to be able to see that as well. Now, another thing I want to talk about is the process. I mean, obviously, like I said, you had your first album as well. Did you learn a lot in terms of that you know, producing that first album? And did you take a lot of that with you when it came to this new one? Did you take anything from producing the second album versus the first one?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. Thank you for asking. The first record that I made, it was the first time I had really ever been that hands on or in and around a studio. So it was that very wide-eyed, you're writing everything down on a notepad, even the stuff they say you don't need to, and it's just very tedious. And there's not a comfort there, but there's still an excitement, and it kind of evens out. So it was slightly overwhelming, and I got kind of thrown into it really quick because the first record, we had set a release date and everything. Like, we recorded it in 2 days, and so there was a lot of stressful things. I didn't get to learn. I picked up a lot, but I didn't really get to like, it didn't soak in until making this second record. I got to be more hands-on. People let me do more things, like be a part of like helping the drummer set up and mic placement. And I just wanted to be, and it was a very comfortable environment. We did it in four song segments. So I would pick out four songs, get enough money to record those songs, and then we'd go in and do it, and then I'd write more songs. And it ended up just being like we didn't release them, but it would be as if you released four EPs and then put it together as a full-length album kind of deal. But I just did that over a period of time, just because it was also a crazy time in my life. And, being a musician, we're not all millionaires, so we just try to – we're making ends meet and, like, following our dream and, trying to chase it down and everything. But it's fun. So throughout that process, I learned so much and had like, just great players and a great studio engineer in there we all became family and friends pretty much on the spot. So, but I did learn a lot from the first record, and it makes me excited for the third record, I guess is the best way to put it, because I feel like that's going to be an even better experience for me.
Yeah. Now, to my understanding, it's just for my benefit. The first album was produced in Texas, and then the second one was in Nashville. Or did you produce both of them in Texas, or what was the situation?
No, they were actually we did them both in Nashville. I came up from Texas and did them both in Nashville, and I'm up here a lot now too. So it's one of those things where it's coming up here in that connection. It's like it's easier to be like have this as a home base, but still being a Texas artist is very important. Like Texas is, just so embedded in music, and it's the reason why I got into this in the first place. So it's, you can't ever forget where you come from. But Nashville's a great hub full of like talented and like inspirational people. So it's kind of nice to have both places.
I've always talked about the fact that I'm more into the more Texas country kind of situation than the Nashville sound, which is, it's been a long debate over many a decade in terms of that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Texas sound, definitely a little bit more outlaw, as they call it, as well. I mean, and obviously you've worked with the Hank Williams estate. In terms of that part of the thing as well. I mean, how's it been for you to, you mentioned the idea that you have to kind of stay grounded in Texas, but Nashville obviously has its opportunities that you need to be there for as well. I mean, how's it for you to bring a little bit more Texas sound to Nashville? And do you think that we're kind of lacking that we're not getting as many people from Texas, making that transition over to Nashville, and, kind of give me your opinion on that.
Well, and I think too, like when I first started coming up here, there's like a, Texas has that, I feel like it's rude to say ego, but we will say it because it feels just like the right word. I got a lot of grief for coming up here. It was kind of considered selling out to do so, but nothing about me, as far as like my sound or who I was, changed. Like Texas, like being a Texan and that Texas music scene is an attitude that like you and like Texans always have it. It's this thing that like, Willie and Waylon first did. It's like, this is all it was those guys going down there making the music that they wanted to make. And that attitude is like, we stick to our guns. Like, this is how we feel we should sound. This is how we think we should sound. And everyone in the audience feels the same way. But the transfer it's gotten better over time. I'm seeing a lot more of like the guys that I used to run with down in Texas up here. I'm running into them. And it's really funny because inevitably kind of everyone all ends up here. Because even though Austin is like a live music capital of the world and got such great venues and a scene and like labels coming out of it, usually the main like hubs as far as getting your music out there are out of Nashville. So a lot of those guys end up here anyway. So the stubbornness just always feels like a waste of time. And that's something I realized when I had the option to either move to Austin or check out Nashville. I went to Nashville first because it was like kind of like taking a shortcut, If you were going to spend 10 years in Austin and then 10 years in Nashville, why not just go spend 10 years in Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting dichotomy in terms of that as well. I mean, you know, it's like the movies in Los Angeles. Yeah, if you're an actor, you gotta be in Los Angeles to be a great actor. But yet we're seeing a lot more productions outside of Los Angeles that are going on. Same can be said about country music.
Yeah.
A lot of these artists, it can be really extremely local. They could still live in their wherever they want to live and produce albums and all that as well. But in order for you to have any kind of success, you have to be in a major city like Nashville. I know quite a few maybe be going to Los Angeles, but Nashville has always been the capital in terms of the country music scene. So yeah, I completely understand what's been going on there as well. So it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, let me change gears a little bit and say, you know, what's it like to just perform in Texas versus Nashville? I mean, like you said, Austin has one of the largest music scenes there is. They have a music festival every year or two at least. And obviously Nashville has a lot of singer-songwriters like yourself as well. I mean, is there a huge difference between the audiences? Obviously the opportunities are there for you, but can you tell me a little bit about the differences between Nashville and in Texas and maybe some of the similarities?
The best thing I can say is it's a similar but different experience in the sense that when you're playing in Nashville, people kind of want to hear like covers. We're getting in more of a thing where people want to hear songs that we've written specifically if you go out, play a show, and set CDs out. But people mainly come to Nashville to hear you sing other people's songs. And Texas is a very like songwriter-driven community. They're like, hey, play us anything that you've written, you know? And that's what keeps them like going, and they, you know, try to find a way to dance to it or drink more beer to it. And it's cool. It's supportive in the way of like it's a weird transfer because Nashville is a city full of artists. Like they have writers rounds and everything like that, but that's something that everybody's doing. Like they don't have that in Texas. So when you go down there, you kind of get to play more of like your stuff, the stuff that you know you kind of want to play anyway. So it's nice to have that transfer and like see people. The main appreciation is the same, and that is music. But the appreciation for like whatever that music is different. Like say originals would be Texas, and they love that stuff because it's coming from you, and you're a Texan. Or even if you're not, they just if it's a good song, they're like, that's a great song, man, good job. In Nashville, they're like, play Sam Hunt, you know, play Luke Bryan, play something else you don't want to play, you know? So,
yeah, you know, I mean, and, you know, really, to tell you the truth, you're going to have, those guys actually had to freaking make their way up too and sing their own stuff. And then they're probably saying, they probably have the audience say, play Garth Brooks or play George Strait. It's really kind of weird in order to, you know, because, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, obviously have their own stuff in their back pockets, and they could be the next big hit. You know, hopefully your
yeah.
album is very I like that. Maybe we'll go get a couple good hits on it. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see the independent scene. I mean, I've talked to several of the artists under your publicists. And it's interesting to note the huge indie scene in terms of indie country artists where, you know, they're not signed to a label yet or, you know, they're just doing their own thing. And, you know, I think it's great. And like I said, we get a lot of people from different parts of the country that aren't going to go to Nashville right away, but, you know, but they're doing their own thing and they're really kind of great. So I'm happy that addition's still there as well. So, you know, I think that hopefully that catches on a little bit more in terms of, you know, some people that want alternatives to what they hear over the airwaves. So we'll have to see how it happens there as well. So, you know, it is kind of interesting to say at least that, you know, Texans are more open to hear, new artists as well. So so it's great to be able to hear that as well.
My bad. Yeah, they spend their it's funny. A lot of those people, they like to just go out and they're like, hey, I got a Friday night off. Let's go go to a bar and see if we can discover someone new. It's kind of a really cool, like, way to – I've been working hard all week. That's kind of what I've seen, like, when I go back home or when I'm playing. They're like, yeah, we just came out to have a beer and hopefully get some good music, and thank you for being the good music. And, you know, well, thank you for coming out to get a beer. I appreciate it. It's cool.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, with the new album out and all that as well, I mean, we have the current single that's currently out right now, Burn the House Down, as well. Are you planning to do any music videos this year, or is it just going to be, releasing the songs over the next couple months?
So, Burn This House Down actually has a video. I think it's on my webpage for sure, jeremyparsonsmusic.com, and on my YouTube channel. But we're about to do a music video and release this. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. I should be teasing it more, I guess, but I'm just going to blurt it out because I'm excited. Why Is the Bluebird Blue is going to be the second single, because that song has been such a big fan favorite, and it wasn't originally even supposed to be on the record. We kind of just did it, and at the end we had to get a Kickstarter campaign to, like, get the record mastered and pay for everything, because it's just an expensive process. Everything is chasing the dream is always at a price. But we did a Kickstarter campaign. I was like, if we raise the money, that's cool, we'll get it done. And then we raised the money, and I had a couple of days left, and we decided if we could raise a little bit more money, I'll throw an extra song on the record. And that song was Bluebird, and we raised the money and went in and recorded it, and it ended up fitting on the record perfectly. So I think when weird stuff like that happens and people just keep coming out and requesting it, to me that speaks that I need to do something with it. I need to put it more in people's face because they're enjoying it. So we're going to shoot a music video for that here in probably the next 2 weeks or so, and I'll get it out to all y'all. We'll do the single on that one. So I'm really pumped about that though.
It's great to see so much fan support. I think the idea of Kickstarter is really great. I mean, if your fans are really interested in your music, that be able to get behind it is really, really, I think it's even more, all the more better, to show that, you really do believe in this project. So, yeah, I mean, it's great. And it's great to be able to hear the songs going to be included. And obviously, like I said, the fans seem to be really, really hype about the song. So I think everybody's looking forward to the music video and the new single coming out as well. So we'll have to see what goes on there as well. Anything else going on with you? Obviously, you said that you'll be doing some dates in Nashville. Are you going to be doing any dates back in Texas, or any dates coming up in the next couple months?
I don't have anything set in stone. I'm talking with some people right now, so I guess the best thing to do would be keep checking at my website, because as soon as I don't want to say yes and then it not happen, but on my website I'll get dates up when I get new ones. So I'm looking maybe March, April-ish, a couple months down the road, like right after I release the Bluebird single or so. Trying to get back down there, because I had some people that I was down there for Thanksgiving, and I had some people reach out to me, and we've been in talks, but you know how talks are. They are exactly talks. So we'll see what happens.
Yep. And you guys can check out social media at JM Parsons Music as well. It's great to be able to talk to you, Jeremy. And it's great to be able to see your insight in terms of Texas versus Nashville. I mean, like I said, I'm very interested in that dynamic as well. So best of luck to you in the new year as well. Hopefully we'll get some dates coming up. If you ever come out to Vegas, let me know. Definitely we'll get you back on and talk a little bit about some of the music as well. I know we don't get as many country acts as we should. We usually do right around rodeo time as well. So hopefully maybe we'll, around rodeo time in November, December, we'll be able to hear you. But best of luck to you this year, and hopefully the new single pops off as well as the fans like it.
Heck yeah, I hope so too. And best of luck to you. Hey, thank you so much for having me on. And if I'm in Vegas, you'll be on the list of people that I get in touch with. So don't worry about that. Yeah, this has been great, and I appreciate all the questions and to close out on the Texas and Nashville deal. I just thought of the best way to think of it is like it's funny because they're at each other's throats sometimes, but it's like sometimes they shake hands. It's like a sibling rivalry, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I think that would be the best way to put it as well, Jeremy. They may be squabbling from time to time, but in the end, we get some great music out of both. So it's a great result.
Heck yeah! All right. Well, thank you so much again, my friend. You're the man. I appreciate you.
No, not a problem at all, Jeremy. And like I said, best of luck to you in 2018. We'll look forward to some more music from you.
Thank you so much. I look forward to putting it out and getting back in touch with you. Thanks, man.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Jeremy Parsons, everybody. You guys can check him out at JM Parsons Music. Everywhere you can think of. So you guys can check out Jeremy Parsons. Really great guy to be able to talk to as well. We said we'll have a show next week. I'll let you guys know what that show is a little bit later on. I'll probably be booking it tomorrow. We do have a couple people that are interested in coming on the show as well. Thank guests for being on the show as well. You guys can check out the archives at blogtalkradio.com/somewhereinvegas. And also on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and everywhere you can find podcasts, pretty much you'll be able to find some of the old episodes as well. I think there was a guest I had on last month that I'm probably going to get back on to talk a little bit about her books of, about single girls and, being a single woman, all that as well. We'll be talking to her maybe next week, hopefully, because I want to really talk about her books. It's right around won't be able to do a show right before Valentine's Day, so it'd be great timing for her as well. So, we'll have a couple guests hopefully booked for next week as well, and I guess the week after I'll be in Oklahoma City. Know what's going on then, if I do any live shows while I'm there, if I get anybody cool that I can interview while I'm out in Oklahoma City, I will like guys let you know. Please follow us on Twitter at SWIV. That's at SWIV. That stands for Somewhere in Vegas, the initial. You guys find Somewhere in Vegas also on Facebook as well. See some of my most old shows and all that as well. For now, we'll talk to you guys next week here on Somewhere in Vegas, Mondays, 1 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Eastern. We'll talk to you guys next week.